Brunch is back, ladies and gentlemen, and Yelp Guest Manager is here to help the Sunday Funday crowd find your restaurant. Yelp Guest Manager is the no-fee way to fill your tables, so prepare to spend less. But you're also getting a whole lot more. We're plugging your restaurant into the biggest consumer network in the U.S., creating massive awareness with the folks looking to book now. Sign up for Yelp Guest Manager today to get delayed billing for 60 days to start the brunch season off right. Go to restaurants.yelp.com/full comp to grow your restaurant, not your expenses. Terms apply. Now here we go.
Hey, what do you do? I work for Hooters. You either get a, oh, awesome, sponsored my kids' little league, love it, guys, my family goes there, or you get a, oh. And when I get that, you know what I usually find out? They've never been in a Hooters. They don't know what it is. They have an idea, but they haven't been there. So I reach out and say, well, would you like to go with me? Let me show you.
Welcome to Full Comp, a show offering insight into the hospitality industry, featuring restaurateurs, thought leaders, and innovators. Served up on the house. Are you on track to hit your profitability goals for this year? If you're struggling to hit your numbers, I might be able to help. Here's how I do it. Every year, I offer 5 complimentary growth sessions to restaurant owners looking to scale. In this call, we'll examine your current situation to see what is and isn't working. We'll identify your growth possibilities by the close of the year. We'll uncover the number one thing holding you and your business back, and we'll develop a growth plan that will get your business results. Go to planwithjosh.com to schedule one of the 5 complimentary growth sessions. They're going to go quickly. They always do. Aging gracefully isn't always the easiest thing to do. Our world has changed so much in the last 10 years, and our values have as well. And that's led some brands to thrive while others have withered. Hooters, a divisive brand to many, intends to maintain its position in our cultural zeitgeist. And today we chat with Larry Lennon, their COO, to discuss what's changed with the times and what's stayed the same over the last few decades.
I've been here 27 years. I bounced around in college doing like many people do. It's quick money, easy money. You serve, you get out. You go out to a bar and meet more people, and then you eventually become a bartender. And then I made my way. I got bored. I went into the Marine Corps right before the Gulf War in 91. Everybody told me to wait and stay because I was a junior in college, but I was impatient and just said, hey, see you later. I'm out. Went in, got hurt. Just nothing spectacular, right? Got hurt. There was a reduction in force. Decided to get out. Okay, I'll go back to school. Ended up moving to Florida from New York, where I'm from, and then started in the restaurants again. And I was bartending, having a great time. And one day the guys from Hooters were at my bar and tried to recruit me. And I was 28 years old at the time. You think by then I would have figured out what I wanted to do with my life. And I said, nah, I don't want to do that. I'm having fun. And then, you know, they came again and I realized, well, guess what? I could be making this money, having this good time when I'm 40, or I could actually have a career and move forward. So I actually went into the Hooters, put my resume down, almost pulled it off the table because I wasn't sure. And then they took it, came in, interviewed me. And then I said, all right, I'll take this job to get some experience in the restaurant industry as a manager. Then I'll get a real job. Because back then, Hooters was, we were about 60 stores. We didn't have alcohol, smaller menu. We weren't as big as we are now, you know, on 5 continents around the world. And I thought, oh, okay, I'll do this. And then one thing led to another and I stayed. And 27 years later, here I am going from MIT and training, sweeping the parking lot, Kirkman Road, to the C-suite, being the COO of a brand on 5 continents, close to $800-900 million in sales.
You said the C word, career. That seems to be a hurdle for so many of us in the industry, is trying to paint a job in the restaurant industry ultimately as a career. For you, I think that definition evolved with time. When you first started as a manager in training, what did that roadmap look like? And then what does it look like today for a manager in training?
Yeah, great question. So for me, I didn't know what it looked like. I was just taking it, and you know, I kind of shoot from the hip and I'm impulsive. And I joined the Marine Corps with a year left in college. So an open contract, they could do whatever they want with me. The recruiters loved me. So I didn't know what it meant at the time, but it unfolded in front of me and I kept enjoying what I was doing. It was a fun brand. I got to do a lot of cool things. There's a lot of events that go on with Hooters, charity stuff, golf events, things of that nature. And then each time there was something new presented to me, and I was afforded the luxury to move around a little bit. Hey, you'll go anywhere, right? Yeah, how about Milwaukee? I went to Milwaukee, and then I was a supervisor, and then New York. And then the big point for me was when I was a director of operations, there's only one. I was director of ops at the time, and then the COO, and then the president of the company. I'm like, hey, I'm almost there. I got three guys to beat out for this job. And they asked me to come into the office. I'm a lion and I'm out in the field. I can't come in and sit in an office all this time. But talk to some peers outside of the industry. And they said, hey, you're going to learn everything that you need to know about parts of the business. And so that's what I've done. So for me personally, even if I didn't know it, every time there was something that somebody needed done, I said, well, I raised my hand. I'll try that. Might not have known it at first, but I learned it. And so I learned what was important, not only to the operators, but to the people back here at the restaurant support center and how they could better support those operators for them to get better. So now that was my journey through, and it went from op services. I started that department. Then they asked me to be the franchise guy. Then I took over two of our underperforming domestic units. So I had 75% of it. Then I was the entire world on that. And then now the COO that oversees that. So how does that translate today? So just one thing I'll let you know is that our CEO started 35 years ago as a dishwasher in the original founders. Our chief people officer started as a Hooters girl, was our first vice president, and the company left, started her own company, came back, and now does that. So we're a quirky brand. I tell people that all the time. I can take anybody from Hooters, put them in another brand, they're going to be fine. Somebody from another casual concept might not do as well with us because we have some quirkiness to us. So that now we've walked the walk. So we understand what it's like to be sitting in that. And I think that was a turning point with me for our franchise partners too, which we're about 60% of the system, 40% are domestic and international franchise partners. When I speak, or my boss, Sal, speaks, or Cheryl speaks, they know we have walked in their shoes and we know what it's like to do what they do. We're just not an outsider telling them, hey, it's here. Is the money important? Yes. Are we a for-profit business yet? Yes, but I go about it as, how can we have a win-win? It can't just be that the franchisor wins and the franchisee loses. And it can't just be that the employer wins and the employee loses. So we are dialed in with our development of our people. And to continue on that, we have 400,000 alumni that are Hooters girls. We empower. Right now, we have 2/3 of our management staff come from our hourly ranks. And a greater portion of those come from that Hooters girl rank. And then that keeps going on, whether they're here at the corporate office and take out roles, whether they go out into the field and have a role with a regional manager, things of that nature. We promote from within, and then we add a little bit from the outside because you can't just be all internally. So we have so many opportunities for people. So we have what's called a career journey, and our learning and development people are great. And it's pinpointed right here. Here's what you have to do to get where you're going. Now, the one thing I always tell people when they get stifled, because I was at one point too, man, I'm a GM for this long and I want to do this. The path's not always straight and it'll happen when you never know it. That's why I give advice to those around me, even my peers. If you want to get ahead, show your value, take on something that's not your bailiwick, not what you do, and learn it. You make yourself more valuable to the company. And instead of asking for it, you will be asked. I've never asked for a position. I've always been asked if I'd like to take on a new position.
Overwhelm is a huge hurdle in our industry. And I would assume that as you move up the ranks, the potential for overwhelm only increases, right? Because the stakes get higher, you're dealing with economies of scale and bigger numbers. How has your relationship with overwhelm evolved over the years? And how do you use those learnings to help your teams overcome overwhelm?
Yeah, that's just getting worse as we go on, right? You see in the industry, you see it especially after COVID. Cutbacks, people having to do more with less. I have to do more with less at times, so do we. So really, the way I look at it is, one, you eat the elephant one bite at a time. Two, I just had a conversation with my team this week. There's so much going on. We have to, as leaders, provide more direction and also shield them from that. I say it all the time to people. I don't know if you're familiar with Saving Private Ryan, when he's like, hey, Captain, how can we never hear you complain? Well, complaining goes up. It doesn't go down, right? That's my job, to shield them, and I take a little more of that and give them the pieces that they can eat the elephant one bite at a time. And we have to prioritize that, because what is the mission of the company? So we are aligned from the top at the CEO to the most new person coming in with what our goals and strategies are. And that's where everything needs to be focused. So there's many times that I tell people, and it's hard to tell somebody when they're passionate, no. But what I usually say is, right thing, wrong time. We can't execute that at this moment, but keep it in the bag of tricks, the golf bag, whatever you want to call it, because there's going to be a time we can use that. Right now we're on A, you're at J. We've got to wait. And no is a powerful word to say. And lots of executives and other leaders don't like to hear it because they want to do a shotgun approach. But you got to build the foundation first, then move on to that. Because if you overwhelm your people, you know what you have? No people.
I want to talk about mission, since you brought it up. Mission, vision, and values. How have those evolved for the Hooters brand? The Hooters brand has evolved with time as the public has evolved over time and sentiment has evolved over time. And I think that there's a big conversation to have around the fact that it's a relevant brand today, despite its original beginnings, or maybe in light of its original beginnings. Can you talk to me about, especially with, you look at the Me Too movement and you say the winds of change, and the BLM movement as well, right? The winds of change within our industry, they came in quickly, right? And Lord knows there were undercurrents for a very long time. But on a corporate level, at an executive level, how did you respond to the change in public perception internally?
A great question. So public perception's been part of what we've done. We're 40 years. We just celebrated our 40th anniversary. So it's been around. And as we've moved, I'll just use me as an example. As I've moved around the country, Florida, Wisconsin, New York, back here to Georgia, it's interesting. The first time you pull up and somebody, hey, what do you do? I work for Hooters. You either get a, oh, awesome, sponsored my kids' little league, love it, guys, this, that, the other, my family goes there, or you get a, oh. And so, and when I get that, you know what I usually find out? They've never been in a Hooters. They don't know what it is. They have an idea, but they haven't been there. So I reach out and say, well, would you like to go with me? Let me show you. My daughter played softball for many years, and she grew up. She actually was in a Hooters before she was in our home, because the Hooters I ran was in between the hospital and our house. So, kind of a funny story.
Spoken like a true restaurant guy.
All right. So she had her Hooters gear and she had everything, and she'd be at softball. People would be like, Hooters? And at first it was, let's go to Hooters, Dad. She didn't think anything different. Parents at first were like, ooh. Then they came in, they realized, wow, food's good. Nothing like I thought. And where I'm getting with that is, from the very beginning, empowerment of our girls has always been number one. Protecting the girls has always been number one. So if you came in and you were out of line, you're out of our building. We don't accept that. And then as times change, I would say we were, knock on wood, during the Me Too movement, we didn't have to protect ourselves as much as our girls did. When you saw anything out in the media or you something happened, our girls would step up and say, oh, no, 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 that's not the way it is here. So early on, no competitors to us in that space. Nowadays, there's some competitors to us in that space that are trying to be imitators to us. We, from day one, we look at the fit of the uniform. We make sure it's proper. We make sure it's the way it should be. And again, people ask me all the time, would you let your daughter work at Hooters? Absolutely. Except for the fact that I wouldn't want to put that on one of the managers that my daughter's in the restaurant and she'll come home and say something. And I'll be like, hey, what are you guys doing? But as far as the uniform or the atmosphere or the culture, and when you talk to these girls, they're passionate about it. Recently, if you can look it up and I can send it to you if you need to, a few years ago, we started the I Am program. I am a Hooters girl. We have, of that 400,000 alumni, they're out there. Deputy Cyber Director of Virginia, who now is about to run for a congressional seat, doctors, lawyers, companies owning their own business, independent women. And that's how they made their way through. Smart, independent women, where some are still raising a family and they're there. So not saying that the wins didn't worry us at a time, but the good part is our team was already ahead of the game on that because that's what our values were. That's what we believed in. So we really didn't have as much of an issue as some of the others when that came through. And then besides the I Am an Empowerment of our female employees, we also have a DE&I program where we go through and we heavily promote that. We educate on that. We continue to do that to make sure that everybody's included in everything that we do.
Let's talk about the menu, because I think that 40 years in, that the Hooters brand is a testament to consistency, which you see a lot of in the independent restaurant sector. And Lord knows I did it in three different tiers of dining, is there's constant innovation, right? Always trying to create something new and spectacular and awe-inspiring. And restaurateurs prize innovation, right? Who can do the newest, weirdest shit? But customers prize consistency. They want to sit in the same chair on the same day and eat the same shit without exception, day in and day out. That is what they are. Talk to me about how the menu has evolved over the last 40 years and how you've managed to stay relevant through focus and consistency.
Yeah, that's a great question. So the funny part about that is what you mentioned, people want what they want. We still have people, no matter what we put on the menu, they come in, don't even open it up and go, I want my 10 wings, for sure. Hot, my curly fries, and this. And we're like, hey, we just put all this time and effort into this limited time offer menu over here. What, you guys have a menu? And then it's interesting, for a long time, we'd do focus groups and they'd say, just like I said before, people don't know who we are. I wish you had seafood. I wish you had salad. I wish you had, we've had that since day one in our restaurants. So part of the things we've done is our core is narrow and deep. And that also goes for our menu. We have what people come in for, the best wings around, and we want to continue to innovate that. So we have our original breaded Hooter style wings. We have naked wings, which is unbreaded, which you get most other places. We have Daytona style, which are excellent, finished out of the grill. And then we do smoked and roasted now as well. Talking about that innovation, we did make a little attempt to do something different with a stuffed wing. Just didn't go well from us. It was an LTO. It was in and out. Thank you very much. And we're gone. So what we want to do, what I want to do, and I'm currently helping to lead a product development committee, is what can we get that's down the fairway that people are going to like? But also, what can we get that's just a little bit uncomfortable so we can talk about and get them coming in? Because as it is in the States, we're more of a appetizer, finger food, people communal joining, eating things, not a center of the plate. Now, outside of America and the five continents we're on, they have both center of the plate. There's a lot more entrees. We've tried that here. So far, we haven't found the secret to make that work because 40 years later, we've indoctrinated everybody. So we're not always looking to be the craziest outside. We want to be on trend. We want to look at things. For us, we think we can add complement by new sauces, different desserts, different appetizers, a handheld, something of that nature, and then move the people into different things in the menu. Most people don't know we've got tremendous burgers. When they come in, they're like, wow, I can't believe that. But we do. We've got great food, great seafood. So there's nothing we're doing. We are trying to innovate and make things new, but not so far out of the realm that we alienate our core customer.
And as it relates to pushing towards the center of the plate, is there any concern around product market fit? You're known for this thing in a world where everybody's striving to be known for something. And you nailed it. It's like Hooters and wings and curly fries. In your mind, as the COO, could that be enough? I mean, it's been enough for 40 years, at least within the States. Is there any scenario in your mind as a leader where the focus moves to frequency or scaling up overall volume of these core items as opposed to innovating outside of your core business?
Well, I think frequency and scaling up is what we all want to do, right? You know, part of that is our new Hoot Club loyalty program. We hadn't had one before, and buzzword, right? You hear it everywhere. Everybody's on there. They need the loyalty. They need the people. They need to be coming in. So we're going to continue to do that. So to answer your question, we are going to stay true to who we are, but we are going to experiment because 40 years later, things are a little different than they were when we started. We had a very small menu. We still have some franchise partners. We've had some partners with us the entire 40 years that some wish it was still the same. We have to balance between, and my opinion is, we're the leader. We started this. We're the wing, the Hooters style. We started that. So we have to continue to innovate that and make it better. And everybody else is an imitator to that. And so that's where my focus is. But I also want to add things that the veto vote, right? If you come in and you're a vegan, if you come in and, you know, we tried Unreal Wings for a while, wasn't exactly right. We're looking at some other items, but salad, seafood, there's something for everyone. No different than before 2008. We had nothing but beer. So that was a big veto vote. If you didn't like beer, didn't drink wine, you didn't drink liquor, you couldn't come in, or somebody probably didn't go to Hooters because they're like, nope, can't do it. So we did that in 2008. And then the same thing happens in our international that we talk about. We are not just all the American, here's what you eat because it's us. We have a core menu that every Hooters will have, but then we let Thailand have pad thai, right? We let each country have something that they're local, so that if their local friend doesn't like American food, they come in and eat it. One of the best things about us is our nimbleness and flexibility, even being a brand our size. That goes for whether it's where we move in for construction or how we interact with our franchise partners, to let them have the essence of the Hooters way, but in their country. So it's everybody comes in and they feel more comfortable. It's not they've come into a Hooters in the USA. They came into Interlaken, Switzerland's a prime example. Little ski chalet. I walked in the first time to meet the owner. He's like, I'm not changing anything. I said, I wouldn't change anything. This has the character of the surrounding. Why? Add a couple things over here. Do this. Keep it exactly like it is. So we're not cookie cutter. And again, we're nimble. My boss, Sal, and I say it all the time. Hey, we make the rules, right? Let's try it. I'm willing to fail fast to make sure that we didn't overlook something. But also, we're going to find a lot of good things out of that and move forward and have a home run.
Let's talk about frequency and all of the things that you do to inspire frequency, because it's the name of the game, right? It costs an absolute fortune, no matter who you are, to bring in a new customer, convince them to try it. But for people that have come in and they liked it, how do you inspire them to come back? And I know that the app is the vehicle, but ultimately, outside of, let's just assume that you're doing discounts and freebies and LTOs, outside of that, what reasons do you give people to come back to Hooters?
It's the experience. We call it the Hooters way. And even without the app, before the app was around, before we had cell phones, and I'm dating myself here a little bit, but it's the Hooters experience. It's what we expect from the Hooters girl. When I was in the stores as a GM, I used to always, new employees, hey, whatever you used to, stop, drop, and run, right? Come out, here's your food, thank you, go back in the alley, and you talk about what you're doing later and where you're going. That's not us. Hooters girls are entertainers, and they're either at the front door greeting somebody with a loud welcome to Hooters, they're helping someone carry, and they see more than one Hooters girl at a table, or they're at their table talking to them about whatever it may be. I was sitting in Liverpool, England, and so I said to the girl, oh, and she said she was from Brighton. So, oh, so you're a Brighton Seagulls fan? She goes, nope, I'm a Liverpool fan because I live here. And she was able to talk about sports, soccer, football over there, as they call it, soccer here, as we call it. We encourage all our girls to do that. So it's not just a transaction. It's not just, here's your food, thank you, see you later, please pay me. It's the atmosphere. It's everything going on that's in the restaurant.
How do you build that culture? Do you hire for that? And if you hire for that, how do you determine whether or not they innately have that disposition?
Yeah, so I would say it's both. Some people innately have it. I innately have it. You could put me anywhere on this planet, drop me there, and I'm going to feel comfortable talking to people and having a good time if you haven't noticed already. Some people, it takes them to come out of their shell. There's a lot of girls that are some of our top girls that came in, and they were so shy, reserved. They didn't know it. But by having others to help train them, having show them those steps and really make them feel comfortable. And we've talked about that earlier in this, is that we are there for our girls. If something they don't feel comfortable with, they're the manager. Hey, see you later to that person. They're not going to be in here. I'd rather lose that guest than have one of my girls feel uncomfortable or one of my managers feel uncomfortable. So we continue to do that. And again, through our learning and development career journeys, we have a lot of training that goes on that helps with that and helps them become better. And ultimately, that translates to real life, right? Not only does it translate to real life for all of us in the restaurant industry, because you're talking to people, you're interacting, but for some of these young women that are shy, you'll hear testimonials all the time about, wow, this is what gave me my voice and why I'm successful at where I am today. Is it for everybody? No, some fell out and they just don't like it. But same in every restaurant. Some people just don't do it. They don't like it. They don't like being front stage, right?
Let's talk about your franchisees. Yeah, I mean, you played a pivotal role in the scaling of this franchise model, which meant you had to get really good at determining who would be a great business owner and who wouldn't, which I think is much harder than figuring out who's going to be a great server or who's going to be a great general manager. What was that process look like? What did the evolution of that ideal franchisee look like over time? And describe for me now, like, this is the type of person that I think makes an amazing business owner, an amazing franchisee.
Sure. Well, one, obviously somebody has to have the money to get into the business, right? I came into the business, we had long-term, we still do have long-tenured franchise partners. I just signed one of our franchise partners up for another 20 after their first 29 stores. So, and then we have some that are trying to exit because of that. So that's the balance that we're coming in. Now, when I came in, So a little, I will tell you, I think it was a little different. I don't know if there was as much focus on the franchise. And the first thing I told our CEO was, I am going to advocate for them just as much as I would for us, although I work for the brand, because if it doesn't make sense for me, why would it make sense for them? And we ultimately want them to be successful, right? Top line, bottom line, we need it all. But one thing that I do see from anybody that's been brought in historically or we bring in new is, one, they know their limitations. So if the ones that come in and think they know everything and it's easy, it's just chicken wings and beer, and they don't hire a proper operator, are the ones that aren't as successful and we have to help them a little further. The ones that come in are grounded. They know what they can do best and they hire the right people around them. As we say, A's hire A's, right? B's hire C's. The A's that hire A's to help their business are the ones that are better off. And if they have a little skin in the game, our largest franchisee is in Mexico City, Hooters to Mexico. There are 25 or so locations right now, which that is about a third of our international fleet. And they've grown up from a smaller family owned to now somebody's bought them, the family still involved, but they knew when they had to make that jump. And then we have some onesie twosies that if they don't make the money, that they don't eat. So we support them both in the same ways. But if I were to break it down, having the proper collateral, the proper money to get into the business, having either some background of it or having a solid operator that's going to do it and being bold and knowing that this is different than any other brand that you're going to be a part of. Because again, something happens, Hooters, if you put Google, I'll challenge you to put Google Hooters on your Google alerts and see how many you get and how many are not really related to the actual business, but tertiary related to the business that we get from there. So, but we'll continue to grow that. And COVID put a little bit of a damper on that, obviously, like it did for everybody. Good news about that. We only closed 4 of our corporate stores during the COVID time, probably less than 5% of the overall, but more of them were in the onesie twosies in the international market. We're starting to see those come back pretty strong with some interest coming right now. I think, well, we opened one last year in the UK. We have at least one more coming to the UK, coming up here pretty soon. And then we've got some interest in the Asian market. And then Hooters to Mexico, our partners down there, they'll continue to run 4 or 5 a year. And great experience. If you ever get down to Mexico City, I highly recommend going into one of their restaurants.
Let's talk about go-to-market strategy. So one of the things that a franchisor does for a franchisee is there's marketing support, which I would argue in our industry, people desperately need. Everybody does everything but marketing, typically. And there's never a better time to market, in my mind, than before you open. Because Lord knows awareness is typically the biggest hurdle there is, especially internationally, when people have no familiarity with the brand or maybe even the food type. What does your go-to-market strategy look like for your in-house stores, for franchisees? How do you let people know that you're coming? And then how do you let people know that you're open, that you exist, and what you're all about?
Well, the good news there is they do most of the work for us, 40 years in the business, and we have 99% unaided brand awareness. We're up there with the big ones, Coke, all those folks, right? I've been to 55 countries in the world, and as I go around and people ask, Hooters, yeah, they know what it is, and most of them have an idea about what's going on. So many times we don't have to do anything. What we spoke about earlier, some of the detractors are like, we wouldn't have that. We don't want that in our town. So then again, we have our people that will talk about, well, do you know what we are? Here's where we are. But other than that, we have a great team here at the marketing department where we are. We have a national ad fund that everybody gets in together. Then we have people that sit on that and say, hey, here's how we're going to dole these dollars out. We're going to do this. But it's really word of mouth happens more than anything. I'll tell you, Stephen from our PR company, I answer questions for him a few times a month about, is this true that Hooters is opening in Joliet, Saskatchewan, wherever? Because somebody puts up a sign or somebody talks about it and it makes the news. And I'll be like, nope, not on our list. It's fake. Somebody's riling somebody up over there. But we do have a plan for marketing. We have a plan in a box that we give to our marketing, our folks on what to do and how to do it. And then they have all the assets that we develop. And then we support them with that when we get out there on the ground with them.
For the locations that don't work, whether they're in-house or franchise locations, are there common causes?
There are some common causes. So right now, if you were asked that, I'll take that more of a, hey, why have some stores closed? Well, 40-year brand, legacy brand, trade markets move. We've had it happen. People are at the end of their lease and the trade market moved 2 exits up because that's where all the new businesses are. So that's generally where it goes. And sometimes it was poor decisions. You know, when I got involved 2017 or so, I look back and there are just some poor decisions that were made because, especially internationally, we try to say, hey, they're the expert. They know the market. So if they think that's a great spot, we'll let them do it. We've changed that a little bit where we partner better with them now to ask demographic, what are your drivers? What's coming this way? How do you see it moving forward? And then, frankly, what's the rent? Is that going to work in your P&L and in your structure? Because some people don't think about that. It's an afterthought of, oh, no, it's a great spot. We'll make it. Well, will you? What's your plan to do that? So we have, we call them franchise business directors that oversee that. They're in between me and those folks in the field, the franchise partners, and they help look at that. And then everything comes to a development committee here at the office. And frankly, we make our best guess. Do we miss our own sometimes? Absolutely. But we're getting better each time on what it takes to have the right demographics and people, traffic drivers, and where we're going to be.
What should we steal from you? Like, as an independent restaurant owner or operator listening to the show, you look at Hooters as a behemoth brand. What are the tactics, tools, and strategies that you guys have used to scale and continue to scale that the independent restaurant owner could internalize and utilize?
Yeah, I think a lot of things we do like we're independent restaurant owners. So I think we steal a lot of stuff from independent restaurant owners. But the things that we have in common are don't be afraid to make a mistake. When you're looking at ideas, don't ever shut somebody down just because you've done it before, you've seen it before. There's a small chance that done properly or differently, that's going to work. We used to analyze things 17 ways to Sunday, 1,000 piece puzzle, 997 pieces, but we wanted the last three to make sure. Now we might get to 650 pieces and go, I got a pretty good idea about that. Let's go. And we use, as a company as large as we are, we use our gut sometimes a little more. Now we have data on the back end to back that up before we go full bore. But like I said earlier, I like to try it, either succeed fast or fail fast and know where we can move on to the next, as long as it all points to our strategic objectives that we've established in the beginning of the year. So don't be afraid to make a mistake, put yourself out there, and hey, keep going on what you believe in, because that, especially on independent, your livelihood depends on that. I have a backdrop of people that, an organization that if we fail on something, yeah, it's bad, but it's not, oh, I'm not paying the mortgage bad this month. So we actually try and operate a little more like that with a big corporate backing.
The restaurant industry is filled with unspoken rules and traditions about how things should be done. How would you like to see our industry turn the tables to create a better future for all of us?
Wow, I have not thought about that. You got me caught here a little bit. I'd say for me, I'd like the restaurant industry to continue to evolve to make everybody inclusive, welcome people in, and not be transactional. That's what I see. I mean, the transactional part is what drives me nuts. When we go into a restaurant and somebody's just, expects everything, doesn't, no interaction. I mean, you're there to be entertained. That's what we do. I can eat at home. We now have delivery. I can get it delivered at home and just have somebody drop it at my door. Never have interaction. My goal to go out is to try something new and have interaction. So if I were to take on a brand other than the brand I have been in for 27 years, I would change that culture of the stop, drop, and run to, hey, how do you engage that guest? How do you find out that, oh, that's Jimmy and he's been here and his kid likes that? That's what we try to do. We say we're a community restaurant, and to be part of the community, you have to be in the community. So we are sponsoring Little Leagues, baseball teams. We're out there at Five Keys. We're donating to Firehouse. We're doing all those types of things. And you know what? We may never get anybody back from that, but that doesn't matter. We're doing it because it's the right thing to do. And if we do get something back, great. But that's what I would change in the industry, is that be a little more open to the non-transactional side of the business and start, like, you're opening your house to somebody. Hey, are you ready to come to my house? I'm happy to have you here. I'm glad. I'm smiling. Let's move forward and have a little bit of fun at work, because you can have fun and make money at the same time.
Our industry suffers from razor-thin margins, and the only way for us to ensure profitability is to make data-driven decisions. The numbers don't lie, and Yelp for Restaurants just released some incredibly compelling numbers. For starters, Yelp reaches 9 times more customers online than OpenTable. And when restaurants pair that level of visibility with Guest Manager and Yelp ads, they experience up to an 8% lift in diner bookings. Think about what that 8% lift could do for your restaurant's finances. To learn more about how Yelp for Restaurants can support your business, visit restaurants.yelp.com/full comp to learn more today. That's Larry Lennon. For more information on Hooters, visit Hooters.com. If you want to tell us your story, hear previous episodes, or check out our other content, go to restaurants.yelp.com/full comp. Thank you so much for listening to the show. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. While you're there, please leave us a review. A special thanks to Yelp for helping us spread the word to the whole hospitality community. I'm Josh Copel. You've been listening to Full Comp.